morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, or good night, wherever whenever you're getting around to watching this. Thanks for coming along today. Today we're going to be talking about the beer scene in Vietnam, and I have one of the leading breweries joining me. I'm thrilled. I have Loc Trong, who is the founder of East West Brewing, and I have Patrick Barnes, who is the head brewer there. So guys, thanks a million for joining.
Thanks for having us. Thank you for having us.
Let me just see if I can get us all equal here so that we're not kind of... So Vietnam. I have not spoken to anyone from Vietnam before, and I believe it is an incredibly vibrant, busy beer scene there. It's, as far as I understand, it's actually one of the top 10 per capita drinkers of beer in the world.
There is a lot of beer drinking that goes on in Vietnam, that's for sure. Craft beer scene is still growing, very much so, but we've been around about 7 years now, so we're helping to grow the scene here as well.
Right. Yeah, Loc, you, when you founded it, it's like you said, 7 years ago, about 2018, I think, was it?
We opened our door officially on January 2017.
All right. Okay. So yeah, that's 7 years. So you got a bit of a run before COVID hit, and I presume that helped you get over any downsides.
Yeah, I mean, with us coming into the market in back in 2017 was a great kind of craft beer movement in Vietnam during the time. So we came in just at the right time, where there were more people, you know, accepting craft beer and really being behind, you know, better beer than what they've been drinking in Vietnam for so many years. So it was a great 3 year run, and then, you know, about 3 years of dormant, and now we're back, and we're brewing more beer now than we were even in 2019.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, you started up. Sorry, Patrick, we got into the beers now in a second and how you ended up there, but maybe...
Yeah, it's okay.
Your background, you were working for Budweiser in marketing, and that's where you happened to... Is that how you saw the gap, or you saw, like...
So what kind of brought me into craft beer?
Yeah, like, I know you were working with Budweiser, so I'm wondering how that led into, like, how that influenced your decision to open East West, or did it kind of give you an insight into where the market was going?
So I, you know, now it's a good question, right? So now that I've got a chance, you know, a couple of years into like COVID, there's a lot of like self-reflection, right? How did I end up here? How did I end up here in making beer and selling beer in Vietnam? So what I kind of found out a little bit about myself was that I've always kind of had this entrepreneur mindset and determination since a young age, right? So any companies that I've worked for was just to get me experience and to get me more of better understanding about the market, better understanding about people and how they relate to beer and how they connect with beer. But Budweiser is not my first job, right? There's been in hospitality as well as development in resort properties before I got into beer.
Okay.
And it just seemed like a fun industry to get in when I decided that I didn't want to work for a big company anymore. And it was something that I was comfortable in meeting people and sharing with people about their story over a beer. So that's how it kind of all came with, okay, these are the experiences that I had, and how do I put all these experiences together to begin my entrepreneur adventures.
Right, but you came into it as purely as an entrepreneurial venture. It wasn't like an awful lot of the people behind craft breweries are, they're craft brewers who kind of have no entrepreneurial experience. They wander into, it's because they love brewing that they set up the brewery, whereas you came from the fact that you loved just being around people and beer, and that was a good scene, and you wanted to make a business out of that.
Yeah, I mean, it also helps that I grew up in San Diego, which is like kind of the, you know, what back then, at least, I'm not sure now if it's been disputed, but growing up around craft beer was Venus, and it was a big kind of craft beer movement there. So now there's an opportunity to do that in Vietnam. So I took that opportunity.
And just going back to 2017, you said it was a great time. Was it like, was the craft beer scene still very small? So it was a great time that you kind of got in on the ground floor, or was it already a pretty big market that you kind of, you know, that you saw growing?
No, so when we got in, there was probably another like 10 breweries that kind of came in within months before us.
Okay.
So it wasn't like they've been around for years and then we jumped into the industry, right? The first craft brewery probably came in 2015, but then it wasn't until like another 3 years where, wow, you know, this is something that a lot of people can contribute to. Even our close friends, they've only opened 3 months before us or 2 months before us. And that kind of helped with this whole, you know, just promoting craft and what is craft and what the rest of the world does to Vietnam. So it definitely helped kind of with the growth. But I don't think there was that much volume when we started.
Okay.
It's just a combination of all the brewers now starting out. Now everyone is kind of educating each of their friends or customers that it became, you know, like a pretty quick trend in 2017 all the way to 2019.
Okay, but it hadn't started there. Because I'm just looking, like I've seen the pictures of the tap room, and I mean, that looks like, for something that hadn't already become a trend, it looks like a big investment, big risk. It's an impressive looking building.
Yeah. I mean, you should see our tap room in Da Nang. It's even more impressive than this one. But I can show you. So this is the tap room, and then here's a Patrick somewhere up there.
Patrick, we can't see it from the other one.
So we also have a pretty big, you know, maybe double the footprint of this one here in Da Nang City.
Okay.
And my whole kind of philosophy or my whole goal is, how can we amplify the experience of people drinking craft beer in an environment in which that might be a little bit different from the US, right? It might be a little bit different from anywhere in the world, where it's a little bit more, I think the right word to say is a little bit more kind of like chisel, where, you know, we actually take service very seriously, the environment seriously, not just beer in itself. So the service, the environment, the atmosphere. Whereas, you know, some breweries, they would kind of go for how much of a, you know, like a setup that is like out of nowhere, or that we only do like super special beers and, you know, tables and chairs are like built out of pallets. I mean, those are great as well. But then we, for us, if we are selling something that is a bit more expensive compared to other beer, rightly so, because the quality of the beer and everything that goes around it. But for someone to spend a little bit more, they should deserve more in terms of their experience with craft beer.
Right.
So yes, it was a very big investment. I think if it worked, it's great. If it's not, then probably be working again for another company. But through my whole kind of like growing up, it was always this philosophy of saying, okay, it takes the same amount of time, right, and the same amount of money. No, not the same amount of money, but it takes the same amount of time to do something small versus something that is big.
Okay.
So why not just do something big if you're able to kind of pull your resources together to do? because you're still going to be spending the same amount of time and the same amount of thinking. So that kind of helped me be a little bit more brave about, okay, let's just do it.
And it paid off.
Yeah. And it's, hopefully it will pay off. I mean, it's we're still having fun along the way, and the journey is still pretty great, and we're growing, and we're also developing more at the moment. So the journey and everything is pretty good at the moment. In terms of payoff, I don't think any beer company pays off until really you know, it's like the second or the third or the fourth generation, right? But depending on what is paid off, so far I think our paid off is we get to still have fun.
Right, yeah, which is important. Patrick, how did you end up, like, you didn't start, you weren't there at the very first day, so how did you end up, your route to end up in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City?
You know, Vietnam had been on my radar, but I really just kind of got fortunate. My predecessor, Sean, he has been involved with East West, is still involved with East West to some degree. He had to go back to the U.S. for family, and that sort of opened up the opportunity for me here. And I've been brewing about 15 years, so Vietnam had been on my radar already, and just a phenomenal opportunity. I feel very fortunate to be here.
And who were you? You were brewing with someone before.
I've brewed with quite a few breweries. Directly before East West, I was with Sierra Nevada. I was on the innovation team at Sierra Nevada in Chico. And then before that, I was with a mid-sized brewery in Oregon called Double Mountain, known for hoppy beers and sour beers. And then I ran a brewery in Portland, Oregon for about 7 years prior to that.
Okay, so yeah, so you have that wide variety of different beer styles as well, which I'm going to get around to in a moment, because it seems like, just looking at the website, is kind of important in Vietnam that it's not just, like you said, Locke, that, you know, Portland was all the center of craft beer, but it's all hops, you know, very specific style that it's known for anyway. But I'm guessing that's not what plays out exactly in Vietnam, that it needs a different, you know, because of the atmosphere, because of culture and that you need a different variety of beers, do you?
Well, I mean, Saigon is a pretty interesting place. It's a pretty international city in general. But as the country goes, I mean, the palate here doesn't like really bitter beers, so the more old school IPAs and pales don't sell quite as well. But it's a very diverse palate. I mean, even our core range has quite a few Belgians in it. But I'm really lucky to have the opportunity here at East West that there is no real limit for us. We're really pushing the boundaries still. We do barrel aged beers, we do sour beers, mixed fermentation, and fruited beers. We push the envelope as much as we can. But even in our core range, our demographic seems to really enjoy Belgians. They really like hoppy beers, but a lot of the hops are more New Zealand, Australia, fruity hops. But we have a unique opportunity at East West. Locke and the team have done a great job of building a really polished brand, and people trust us to make great beer.
Right. And sorry, just to come back then, I mean, Locke, from the very start, I understand that, I mean, you serve, like, food is a big part of the offering there as well. So does that have to, do you think about that when you're developing the beers? Do you think about, like, this is going to pair with some sort of food that's there? Or do you just brew the, you know, I want to try and brew this beer, let's see.
So on our menu, each of the dish that we have actually has some recommendations on what beer to pair with. Okay. And I think a big part of craft beer is the experience around craft beer and not just necessarily the beer in itself. So food is a very important part for us. I mean, we've had chefs in here that are quite famous that helped us in the beginning, and then we still have, you know, chefs that are coming out of like 6-star resorts that currently right now that's heading up the culinary kind of program for East West. So yeah, it's very important. And why it's important is we don't just want to sell craft beer, but we want to kind of elevate the whole craft experience as a whole.
Right. So
So very, very, very thoughtful into designing the menu. There's a little bit of Western in there. There's also traditional kind of Vietnamese beer food on there. Obviously, the presentation is going to be a little bit better than what you would find outside. And then there's going to be some stuff that is very fusion, and we like to do that. So it's Vietnamese. It's also kind of American, but then there's in between as well. So I think we can get away with that because we are East West, right?
It's in the name.
If it's just a West brewery, maybe it'd be a little bit different. But we set it up in a way where we're able to do a lot of different things that still all kind of contributes back to the brand of East West.
And Patrick, do you then get involved at any stage? Like, are you told what the menu is and you think that maybe we should brew this beer, that this is the menu next month or something and we should brew for it? Or do you just brew the beers you want to brew and leave it up to us?
We brew the beers we want to brew primarily. My staff is still very young, all Vietnamese, and they're learning a lot about beer and building new recipes all the time. So our innovation pilot program still is really just all over the map. We make everything under the sun. But we always work closely with the marketing team and the sales team and let them know about what beers are coming out, what type of food would be paired well with it, and the chefs will work accordingly with that.
And I guess that brings me, I mean, is your distribution, is it purely through your two tap rooms, or do you have distribution into, you know, supermarkets and off licenses, or are all your sales through the tap rooms?
Is that a question for me?
I don't know. Whoever knows the answer, I guess.
Yeah. So Patrick makes the beer. I think he has some ideas of where it goes, but mainly maybe about 90% of all the beers we make are in the market. So the remainder 10% is in our tap room.
Okay. I kind of had the impression that the tap room was your main sale. So how does distribution work in Vietnam? So is there, like, I guess you're going to have to worry about keeping it cold. You have to, like, are there any big issues around distribution, or is it just fine that you send it out and it gets to where it needs to go?
So we love our beer, obviously. So we want to make sure that the beer is well preserved in a sense when it's leaving, when it's leaving East West, right? But with that also, we also think about the economics of things as well. So how is it to find like a really good balance between the product and the economics and also the market? So with the draft beers, it's 100%, it's gonna be cold. Wherever, whether it's on the truck, whether it's in the warehouse, it's cold when it gets to the customer. However, with our kind of canned products, because we understand that, you know, not all supermarkets or not all restaurants are going to want to keep or want to invest in something cold, just only specific for East West, that, you know, we do pasteurize some of the beers that we put into the market to ensure that, you know, it's not going to re-ferment or that, you know, that the beer is actually under control.
Right.
So yeah, with that, however, if the cans are not in the market yet, we still keep our cans and our bottles cold when we are storing it.
Okay.
But then once it leaves here, because we don't have the control over what the market will do, we prefer to be a little bit safer in terms of deciding to pasteurize,
right,
and at what level.
Yeah, makes sense. Because I mean, yeah, it's the same everywhere. Once it goes out, you have no control over it. I mean, you can ask for things and stuff, but most beers are not sold from fridges; they're sold from shelves. So, but I'm just wondering, you know, because I mean, I'm completely ignorant about Vietnam, really. Other than, you know, I have a vague idea of, so I don't know what the distribution or the divide between urban and rural is. Like, is most of your sales in a big urban area like around Ho Chi Minh, or does it get into rural areas, or is just that just too difficult, or is the market too difficult?
So how we kind of segment the market is by tiers. There's going to be like a tier one city. The size of the city, the kind of like GDP of the city, and the consumer, you know, like appetite for something that it's non Vietnamese, you know, something that they're. So we do look at it in tiers, and maybe about 80% of all of our volume will go into like the tier one, such as like Saigon, Hanoi, Da Nang. So these are more of like the more developed cities, and then the remainder will go into closer to Da Nang, closer to like Hue or Hoi An, or you know, Saigon. Then you have like Linh Tao or Mun Ae that has a market that people from Saigon would travel to.
Okay. I have to interrupt here because I've been saying Ho Chi Minh City, and you've been saying Saigon, and I don't know what the correct what the correct usage is these days.
So I say Saigon because it's only two syllables, and I get to save one syllable. but both is the, I guess the accurate way to say it is Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah.
Saigon was renamed Ho Chi Minh City back in the days.
Yeah.
But I think just because we are in here, and mainly most people would use Saigon.
Okay, that's interesting, because I didn't know. I assumed, like, I knew it was changed, and that's why I was using it. But I assumed that most people use that. I did, but people still use Saigon. It's the main.
People still use Saigon, especially in the downtown core. Ho Chi Minh City is a massive city with a lot of districts. You can drive for well over an hour and still technically be in Ho Chi Minh City. But in the downtown core, most people refer to it as Saigon.
Okay. That's interesting. See, learned something new already. But yeah, I saw, like, I mean, that's a big, there's what, something like 10 million people there. Like, cities that size completely blow my mind every time, because that's twice the population of Ireland just in one city, and it just blows my mind every time, and I try and get my head around it. It's amazing. Actually, talk about Ireland. Both your brewers, I mean, Patrick, you said your predecessor was Sean, so that's two Irish names in there. Is that a deliberate decision here?
Yeah, Patrick just had a holiday, right?
Yep.
Celebrate.
Yeah, same. St. Me Day.
So is that going to be a trend now from now on, that you'll have to find an Irish named breed or successor?
You know, I mean, the company almost entirely Vietnamese, other than myself. I always joke that I'll be the last one. It'll be Vietnamese after me, but we'll see.
Okay, well then that'll be hard. So to get another Sean or Patrick. So,
but it's Sean. An Irish name? I thought Sean was like American.
No, it's an Irish name. Oh. Especially the spelling that was there. So it's actually the Irish equivalent of John. So
okay.
So there now.
Yeah.
Something new as well.
Next time I'm gonna hit up Brian and say, "Hey, Brian, like, I got these brewers, but you know, is this an Irish name?
Is this person acceptable?
Are they Irish enough?
Yeah." So I mean, you've opened up now. You've been there for 7 years. When did you open the second tap room?
Just last April.
Year. Okay, and that's, like you said, it's twice the size. So is it kind of, was that a good choice? Is it working well, or is it a bit too big yet? Or
I mean, Patrick can probably answer that. You know, someone that's looking outside of the tap room, because I'm pretty much daily in financials and stuff like that, so I might have a different view of it, right?
But
no, I think Da Nang's been great for us. You know, our demographic, you know, out in distribution and off-premise sales is primarily Vietnamese. We don't really cater specifically to foreign national market in that way. And in District 1, we get a lot of Vietnamese, and in Da Nang, it's a bit more of a touristy area. And the real estate that we got is ridiculous. We are, if you walk off the patio, you're on the sand. So you really can't get a better view. It's just the perfect location for us. And we get a lot more international traffic there So I think it's been a really great move for us as we continue to progress and grow. East West has a unique opportunity to really become the birth of what craft beer is for generations to come in Vietnam, and our place in Da Nang is going to be a big part of that.
Right. How many breweries are there in Vietnam now? Or do you, does anybody even know?
I don't have hard figure.
I can put out a number, and Patrick can put a number to see if it matches.
Okay.
Are you talking about people who own a physical brewery or marketing?
No, like a brand. I think probably in the 60s.
Yeah, I think that's probably close. I mean, this kind of gets into a semantic conversation about what it's craft. And yeah. I mean, there's guys making like 16 million liters a year who no one has ever heard of outside of Vietnam.
Right.
But they don't really think of themselves as premium brand. Vietnam's a really interesting market for brewing. There's a lot of craft brands. I think, 50, 60 brands actually producing product. Most of them are in southern Vietnam.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm just thinking, last year I talked to Wichit Saitlo in Thailand, and I think it was he who told me that Thailand, that they have very, or at that stage they had very strict restrictions on breweries, but that there was an awful lot of contract brewing going on in Vietnam, and that was being imported into Thailand. So are there a lot of big contract brewers there?
No. There are contract brewers here, and there is a lot of what you speak of. Thailand is very restrictive, even though they are rolling back some of those laws now. Vietnam is one of the more friendly countries when it comes to brewing craft beer. And there are a lot of people who will brew beer here and distribute it outside of Vietnam. A lot of that is more relative to tax. The tax rate is quite high here.
Okay.
The freedom to open businesses and brew beer is pretty open here. It's not as cost prohibitive as it would be in Vietnam or in Thailand, but the tax rate is huge here.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was just something that, and then I had no picture, like, whether there was a lot of, big volume brewing that was just being rebranded, like you had mentioned it earlier. So
there are really only a few players in that market.
Okay. And what kind of size are you talking about? I mean, you're talking significant size then.
There are some pretty significant size, but craft beer, still very much a growing market here. But volumes are still, comparatively to most Western countries, pretty low.
Okay. So what is the big brand? I mean, I assumed, and again, I may be completely wrong on this, but I assumed, that like most places, there's kind of one big lager brand that was kind of has everything. And then is that still the case? Like what percentage of the market is craft beer, and what does the big lager brand have?
Beer has been hit pretty hard recently here. Sebeco, the really large old school brands here are down 23%. Heineken is a big player here. They have a Singaporean brand, Tiger, between Tiger and Bia Saigon. Those are the two biggest domestic macro brands. But Carlsberg is pretty heavy here, and they have offshoots as well. There isn't one player who dominates, but Heineken does very well with Tiger. But most of the macro brands are down. They've been hit pretty hard recently.
Okay, that's interesting. And do any of those big players, do they, like they've been doing everywhere else, kind of put out their own kind of craft brand? Or
I definitely think they've all dabbled with craft brands, the macro, but the economics of it doesn't make sense for them, right? Because it's a completely different market that understands and what craft. As much as we try to educate people and get people to roll over craft, we're only so big to be able to do that for nationwide. So from an outside perspective, it looks like, oh, craft is it's trendy and it's grown, which is very true. However, our growth is not the size of what would make sense for them economically.
Okay.
So they'll dabble, and then it doesn't work. They only, you know, sell 100,000 containers into the market, which is big for us, right? But then 100,000 is really only about half a day of their work. But then now they're working for a full year to do. So it really kind of takes someone leading a macro brewery to say, this is a long-term bet and this is a determined bet, and sure, just look at how do we impact that market, not look at so much in terms of financial, and be comfortable with the incremental growth, but not in a big way, then they can do. That being said, there's gonna be styles that are, you wouldn't say fake craft, which is not traditional lagers, and you know, that's something around like a wheat style, right? That all these macro breweries would own, yeah. Such as like a Blank 1664, or I think that's the name, or like a Hoegaarden. So these aren't traditional kind of pilsner lager style, but they're different enough that the market is believing that is more of, right, like a craft beer. So which actually helps us, right?
Right. Well, yeah, validates it.
Yeah. So it's like a Blue Moon, for example. I mean, Blue Moon's not big out here, and I'm sure they're gonna try now with the growth of like the more of the wheat style beers owned by the bigger breweries.
Okay. And what is your bestseller? Or
our pale ale and our IPA, which are both more North American hoppy style, American pale and West Coast IPA, are nearly neck and neck out in distribution. So hoppy beer does do well here, even though bitter beers don't tend to do too well.
Okay. And you were saying like you do a lot of barrel aging as well.
We do barrel aging as well. Yeah, there's not really anything we don't do. Some of our big premiums are Belgian beers. We do big imperial stouts. We do sour beers almost every month. There's really no limit. We do seltzers and non-alcoholic beers, and there's not really anything we won't do. We won't try.
Yeah, no, and I guess I'm not surprised by the you know, imperial stouts, that, but they do seem like they would be smaller in a hot, humid country. You know, that they are more of a winter beer.
Yeah, I mean, with that being surprisingly, right, I think the reason that we do, and I mean, Patrick can you know, affirm this or not, but one of the reasons that we make so many different beers and not market it, right, is to still be on top of our game when it comes to the level of knowledge and expertise that we bring. And so that's why we continue to do all these things, right? Not on anything for economics. If anything, we probably lose more time and focus so much energy into doing barrel age, but it only comes out like maybe 200 bottles, right? But it's limited and it moves, but that's not the reason why we make it is for economics. It's more of, you know, Patrick teaching and coaching the team, like, you know, we can do this, and you guys should believe that you know, we can. So that's great. Given that, there's a pretty fun story. In 2019, I think there's an app called ratebeer.com.
Yeah.
So it's an app where people would download it, or beer enthusiasts from all over the world, right? They would download this app. They go anywhere in the world. They'll put the name of the beer in there, and they give it a rating based on what they think about the beer. And surprisingly, in 2019, we never entered Rate Beer. I didn't even know we were on Rate Beer. they just gave us an award. One for best beer in Vietnam 2019 was our 12% stout.
Okay.
So this helps bring diversity for travelers, right? An IPA and a pale ale back in the States or whatever is so normal. But like if you can come out here and you can do a stout that's like at that level of alcohol and like the well balanced, people do appreciate that. And yeah, I mean, during the hot weather, it's always best for a pilsner or a hef. But I still like when we, and not all of Vietnam is hot, by the way, right? In Hanoi, it gets quite cold, and even in Da Nang during the winter, like you know, you need heaters outside on the patio. So darker beer do move better in places like in Hanoi during the winter time. But there's still a lot of people that would just try something that is different.
Okay. And yeah,
at the core of this, it's an answer to who we are. You know, we educate staff, but it's also about the experience for the customers. We are able to innovate and create new beers that they get the experience for in our tap rooms, which are nice and cool and air conditioned. So you can have any style of beer here, but that gives us the opportunity and the credibility that when they go back, we still have the opportunity to build brand loyalty here, and people go into their wholesaler and they can find us out there and trust us because they've had more unique products in-house.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. There's one thing both of you kind of mentioned there, and you came in at like both kind of almost as a throwaway comment from two different sides, but it was about, like Patrick, you said that, you know, you'll be the last non-Vietnamese brewer, and Locke mentioned that you're doing a lot of these beers for education so that you can kind of educate the brewers. So is that it seems like that's a very, very important thing for you to be local brewers. It seems like it's critical. So my first question, I guess, is are a lot of the other craft breweries, are they very Western brewers, very Western? Like what's the experience of Vietnamese there and how important is it to see Vietnamese brewers coming in then? Like, it seems like you want to be kind of like a school for brewers.
I do think East-West is at the forefront of what premium craft beer is, especially at our scale. In distribution and creating this sort of taproom environment, I think that we are at the forefront of that. We're not only educating our consumers, we're educating our staff, we're educating our brewers. You know, it is still very much early in the scene here. Craft beer is still brand new in the scheme of things here. It's not like a 60-year game in North America, you know. It's very different here. And right. You have a lot of local Vietnamese brands that cater just to Vietnamese and small neighborhoods. And then you have a lot of Western influence and more polished brands. But most of their demographic tends to cater towards foreign national or tourists.
Right. And but it's an important part that you see, like, do you see yourself as a teacher here, that you're educating the brewers? That's kind of like a defined part of your job almost, or all your job?
It's not all of my job, but it is an extremely important part of what I do.
Okay. And that's, I mean, yeah, and your background, like you said, you came from a number of different breweries, so you had a range of different styles. Was that important then? That was a critical thing in kind of joining the brewery, that for both of you, that you were bringing that, and that from Locke's point of view, you were bringing that as well, that you were kind of like going to bring that range of knowledge that you could pass on.
I'm sure that it didn't hurt him in hiring me to hear that I came from one of the most prolific breweries in North America. But for me as a brewer, yeah, I mean, I've been nerding out on this for so long that it's been a pleasure for me to be able to pass on knowledge that I've gained, which is, you know, outside of the scheme of craft beer, most people don't really know a lot of this information. So it's not necessarily surprising to see people who don't understand it. But craft beer is growing here a lot, and we're still educating consumers on what products are, and I couldn't be more excited, honestly, to teach here.
It sounds like Vietnam, it's very self, well, it has the contract brewing going to places like Thailand and that, but it's a self-contained craft scene, but it sounds like it could explode at any moment. Like, there's an awful lot of, a lot of learning going on. It's still very early in the days, a lot of learning going on, and I presume then a lot of, the cultural food influences and stuff could just kind of, do you think Vietnamese beer is going to make a world kind of impact, or is it going to remain regional? Or
I think it has the opportunity to grow massive regionally. I think time will tell as far as what our influence might be globally, but in the region, there's no question. We're already the biggest player, really, in all of Southeast Asia.
Okay.
Everyone sort of looks to Vietnam to see what we're doing and what we're capable of, and there are a lot of breweries exporting, and we will continue to pursue those options. Vietnam is still growing. I mean, the GDP growing nearly double digits every year. The whole country is growing. So we have a lot of opportunity to grow along with it. People love seeking out new experiences and new flavors here. It's more important than most of the places I've ever been, it seems like. So craft beer has a lot of potential.
So Locke, are you seeing that as being a big thing, a big export market? Or are you? I think you're muted. Let me just check. No, you were muted.
Sorry.
I think we might have lost something, went wrong there. Yeah, I think we've lost him somehow.
Yeah, it seems like we lost luck.
All right. So I guess then, we can hear you again. Okay. You're back.
You're back.
So for us, we're not always trying to make bets on what tomorrow is going to be and what tomorrow is going to bring, right? I think a lot of us is developing, meaning that how can we be better tomorrow than what we are today? And how can we move that needle just a little bit so that we can still be competitive and still grow, right? But we're not looking to be, to take over the world in the next 5-6 months, right? On a realistic level, but then also what are the challenges that we want to put there that actually still scares us quite a bit, right? And the steps that we are doing to get there. So we'll put up goals that are scary, but not goals that it's going to be, okay, like tomorrow we need to take over like Southeast Asia. So this year, everyone, right? And everyone is tied up into some programs or KPIs on what is the growth that each kind of team member will bring to the table this year. And it all gets tracked every month as well to see if we're on track or not on track. And if we're not, okay, where's the gap and how do we fill it up so that we can close up the year to say, okay, we're proud of ourselves because we worked hard to achieve in that. And then what's next? So there's not really a destination that we are looking at. It's more of the journey from now to what we think that the destination could be.
Right.
How do we do it better year over year? And for us, okay, maybe, okay, volume. Do we increase our volume by 50% year over year? Do we increase our reach of tap rooms? And it's all kind of built up into, okay, what are we doing next year? But I think as long as everyone is on that same page, and a lot of our team members and a lot of the people in the company, they are. So it's already pre-planned for the whole year. Sometimes I don't even see Patrick for like 2-3 weeks because everyone is kind of independently achieving each task, but all the tasks coming together, it helps the company to be just a little bit better.
No, it sounds like a plan. It sounds like you've got it well in hand. And I mean, it's the opportunity, like you said, maybe it'll take a couple of generations before it's all generating millions, but like, yeah, you know,
billions. A couple of generations to hit billions.
Yeah. But I mean, it sounds like you said, you're all having fun. You all know when you're all, yeah, like you're kind of growing a market there that is all part of something very exciting. So, yeah. So, I mean, thanks. I know it's kind of probably it's coming up to 5 p.m. there, so you're probably going to start getting people in the door and things like that. So I'll let you go. Is there anything you wanted to say that I should have asked you that didn't come up?
No. Pleasure chatting with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Brian, for having us.
Okay. Well, listen. Thanks a million for taking the time, because, like I said, Vietnam. It's a country I've never been, though I've wanted to go for so long, but someday I'll get there.
Come out.
I'll eat
the crab in Da Nang and stop by, drink a few beers.
I will if I get there, but it'll be a while. But who knows? By that stage, he might have achieved that global domination. Who knows? All right. Listen, thanks a million again, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you. Maybe we'll talk again sometime in the future when I get out there, maybe we'll do it live. We'll do it in person. All right.
Let us know.
Excellent.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye.
Cheers, Brian.